the following is a seminar entitled Spiritual Perfection in Household Life, Session 3, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 21st, 2014, in Hare Krishna Valley, Australia.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Vadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakonvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschat Yadeshatarine. So this is the final session of our Spiritual Perfection in Household of Life retreat. Today we can bring out some points from my essay, Household of Life, An Equal Opportunity for Going Back to Godhead. This was published actually in ISKCON Pune, made a whole book for guiding. They have a big grahastha community there, so this was one of the chapters of their book, my article. In this article I point out there's actually this is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in a lecture he gave in Gorakhpur, India on the 12th of February, 1971, that among the 12 Mahajanas, the number of Grihasthas is greater than the Brahmacharis. He listed Lord Brahma, Grihastha, Narada Muni, Brahmachari, Lord Shiva, Grihastha, Kumaras, Brahmachari, Lord Kapila Brahmachari, Swayambhuvamanu Grihastha, Prahlad Maharaj Grihastha, Janak Maharaj Grihastha, Grandfather Bhishma Brahmachari, Bali Maharaj Grihastha, Shukadev Goswami Brahmachari, and Yamaraj Grihastha. So what's the count? We got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Grihastha and 5 Brahmachari. So one should never think then that grahastha life is not an equal opportunity to go back to Godhead. It is an equal opportunity. It's simply a matter of how you utilize it. A grahastha can be just as Krishna conscious as a sannyasi. It's just a matter of whether you're a grihastha or a grihamedi. If you're actually a grahastha, then you're just as Krishna conscious as a sannyasi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in Grihastha. So we have to, our devotees, our married couples in ISKCON have to learn how to be actually Grihasthas and not Grihamedis. Those who are practicing pure devotional service within married life, that's a Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung a beautiful song teaching the mood for householders. He says, Amara bodhite prabhu ara kichu nai tumi I amara matra pitu bandhu bhai. He prays, O Lord, nothing further remains that may be called mine. Father, friend, brother, you alone are all these to me. Bandhu dara sutta sutta tava dasi das seto sambandha sabbe amara prayas. My friends, wife, sons, and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take for them is only as they are related to you. In other words, my wife is not, I no longer see her as somebody to gratify my senses. You see? I only deal with her insofar as she's related to you. Dana jana griha dada tomara bolia raka kori ami matro sevaka hoya. Declaring that my wealth, family members, home, and wife are truly yours, I continue as a mere servant to dutifully protect them. The next line, it didn't all get printed. Tomara karyera tare obarjivo dhan, and then it didn't get printed. For the purpose of your service, I will earn money and bear the expense of maintaining your household. So just see the mentality, you see. How the grihastha gives up the false sense of proprietorship. He doesn't take my house, my wife, my kids, my bank balance. That is simply maya, is it? He gives up this false conception. He sees everything as Krishna's property. And then Bhaktivinoda continues, Balo manda nahi jani seva matro kori tomara sangsara ami vishaya prahari. I know nothing but is good and bad. I simply render my service. I am but a watchman set to guard the properties of your household. Tomara ichaya mura indriya chalana. I exercise my senses only according to your direction, and thus I desire to hear, see, smell, and taste. Nija sukha lagi kichu nahi kori ar bhaktivanod bole tava sukasar. I no longer do anything for my own pleasure, Bhaktivinoda says. Your pleasure is the essence of everything. So that mentality has to be cultivated by everyone, whether you're a sannyasi or brahmachari, grihastha or vanaprastha. Every devotee who's serious about going back to home, back to Godhead, has to cultivate that consciousness. Your pleasure is the essence of everything, not my pleasure. See, in the material world, material consciousness, my pleasure is the essence of everything. You see? You say, but I thought Krishna consciousness was for, I was supposed to get bliss. That's right. But you have to know the art. How are you going to get the bliss? The art of you getting the bliss is saying, Krishna, your pleasure is the essence. Not my pleasure, but your pleasure is the essence of everything. As long as you try to get the pleasure for yourself, you're still putting yourself in the center. And as long as you put yourself in the center, you're going to be miserable. I don't care how much material facility you have. As long as you put yourself in the center, you are going to be miserable. That's the fact. Undisputable fact. Indisputable fact. But when you take up Bhaktivinoda's, you take his advice, when you take hint from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that your pleasure is the essence of everything, then you can enter into transcendental. That's true transcendental bliss. As we've hundreds and thousands of times given the example, when you feed the belly, every part of the body is nourished. When you take Krishna's pleasure, the essence of everything, then you become absolutely blissed out. Absolutely blissed out. So right now, are we there? No, we're not there yet. We're still battling it out with the modes of nature. Tamagun, Sattvagun, Rajagun. We're still being whipped by these modes, this way and that. Whipped, tortured by the modes of nature. So how do we make that transition? That's why we have the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga. You see? It's like if you're a sick man, you can't eat anything. You're in the hospital, they put you on a very restricted diet, you see. Because they want to keep you on that diet and torture you? No, because they want you to be able to eat a healthy diet, a normal diet. So they put you on a restricted diet so you can get to the normal diet. So the normal diet is pure love of God, to be spontaneously engaged in devotional service. Spontaneous. It's called Vaga Bhakti. Spontaneously serving Krishna without any consideration of rules and regulations. But because we're in a disease state, therefore we have to follow sadhana bhakti. Do this, don't do that, you see. We have our big lists. Do the do's and don'ts of bhakti yoga. So many things is it. Do this, don't do that, you see. Do chant at least 16 rounds and don't have illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, and there are many other things. But those are the main things. The 10 offenses against the holy name. So all of these things are there, these strictures, these Vedic injunctions are there, the do's and don'ts, are there to bring us back to our original, natural, healthy condition of consciousness. So sadhana bhakti then is a means of achieving our natural state of raga bhakti, spontaneous love for Krishna. So everyone is meant to follow rules and regulations. The sannyasis, the brahmacharis, and the grihasthas. There was a verse that I found in this connection. Let's see where it is in the essay. If I can find it, but everyone should read this essay. But Prabhupada is given in the Bhagavatam that Prabhupada has given us. Yes, here it is. It's Bhagavatam 7:12:11. Etat sarvam grihastasya samannatam yater api guru vrittir vakalpena grihastas yatra gaminaha. All the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order of life. The grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation, not during the periods unfavorable for procreation. Let's see. If a householder just wants to have sex whenever he feels like it or his wife feels like it, that's irreligious, that's adharma. And as we read this morning, when Maharaji gave the Bhagavatam class, it's illicit sex. And it will oblige one to take a material body again in your next life. Even if you're an initiated devotee, if you're engaging in illicit sex, you will take birth in the material world in your next life. That's a fact, according to the purport of this morning. So the Bhagavatam says, only during the period favorable for procreation, that's just after the menstrual cycle. Just after, with the Guru Maharaj's blessings, after chanting 50 rounds, just after the menstrual cycle. That is the period favorable. Let's look at Prabhupada's purport. It is sometimes misunderstood that a grihastha, a householder, is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. In ISKCON, it's a very widely misunderstood. Even one I was initiating one girl, and she said, no sex outside of marriage. When I asked her, what are the four rules? No intoxication, no gambling, and no sex out of marriage. Wait a minute. I had to stop the whole initiation ceremony and give a little lecture. Wait a minute, that's not, no illicit sex, and this has been, they still say, well, illicit sex is any sex. No, illicit sex means, it's described here, quote, it is sometimes misunderstood a householder is permitted to indulge in sex at any time. This is a wrong conception of grihastha life. In spiritual life, whether one is a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, or brahmachari, everyone is under the control of the spiritual master. For brahmacharis and sannyasis, there are strong restrictions on sex indulgence. Similarly, there are strong restrictions on grihasthas. Grihasthas indulge in sex only in accordance with the order of the guru. Therefore, it is mentioned here that one must follow the orders of the spiritual master, Guru Vrittir Bakalpena. When the spirit, I should probably have done this yesterday. In fact, everybody's gone. But better late than never. When the spiritual master orders, the grihasthas may accept sex life. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:11, dharman nivruddha bhuteshu kamosmi. Indulgence in sex life without disobedience to the religious rules and regulations constitutes a religious principle. The grihastha is allowed to indulge in sex life during the period favorable for procreation and in accordance with the spiritual master's order. The spiritual master's orders allow a grihastha to engage in sex at a particular time, then the grihastha may do so. Otherwise, if the spiritual master orders against it, the grihastha should abstain. The grihastha must obtain permission from the spiritual master to observe the ritualistic ceremony of Garbhadana Samskara. So, in ISKCON, that tradition of samskara has taken the form of chanting 50 rounds of japa. It's right there. It's in the Veda base. You can read the exact letters. Actually, I quoted it here in the essay. That's our ISKCON version of Garbhadana Samskara, 50 rounds of japa. Then he may approach his wife to beget children, otherwise not. A brahmana generally remains a brahmachari throughout his entire life, but although some brahmanas become grihasthas and indulge in sex life, they do so under the complete control of the spiritual master. The chatri is allowed to marry more than one wife, but this also must be in accordance with the instructions of the spiritual master. It is not that because one is a grihastha he may marry as many times as he likes and indulge in sex as he likes. This is not spiritual life. In spiritual life, one must conduct one's whole life under the guidance of the guru. Only one who executes his spiritual life under the direction of the spiritual master can achieve the mercy of Krishna. Yasha prasadat bhagavat prasadam. If one desires to advance in spiritual life, but he acts whimsically, not following the orders of the spiritual master, he has no shelter. Yasha prasadam nagati katopi. Without the spiritual master's order, even the grihastha should not indulge in sex life. So they say that I'm very strict spiritual master. I'm not. Actually, Prabhupada is strict. This is not my stricture. They say, one sannyasi said, I'm even more strict than the sannyasi guru, they said. But actually, I'm just a messenger boy for Prabhupada. Prabhupada is given what is the standard right here. And that's it. And the householder may like it, he may not like it, but if you want to be an initiated disciple in Prabhupada's lineage, you have to obey this principle. Otherwise, you're a rascal. You're a rascal with a capital R. You're a maha rascal. If you say, this is not important, I don't have to do this. You see, you're disobeying. You're a disgrace to the sampradaya. So, this is the standard. And then we say, "Well, how can I be happy? How can I make my wife happy? Krishna consciousness. That's the answer. Krishna consciousness. Krishna. How can you possibly find? Because Hare Krishna is better than sex. It's better than sex. How can you give up sex? It's easy. You simply have to learn how to relish the taste of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. It's better than sex. It's more pleasurable than having sex. But it takes time, it takes training to come to that state. So you have to, in the meantime, you have to be patient until you actually come to that stage. You have to have faith and be patient. And follow the principles, follow the instructions given by Prabhupada, and then that will come. There's a mundane example in this connection. There was an old song back in the 50s, I guess it was. It was a popular song on the radio when I was a kid. It was called The Ballad of Desert Pete. And there was a well out in the desert somewhere. And there was a note signed by Desert Pete on the well. There was actually a container full of water there. And it said, "Don't drink the water, use the water to prime the pump. And then you'll get unlimited water." So somebody's dying of thirst, they come up to this pump and in the middle of the desert, and they see it says, don't drink the water. Pour it down the pump. Well, are you going to drink the water, or are you going to have faith in old desert Pete and pour it down the pump? You see? So the song went like that. You got to prime the pump. You have to faith. You have to have faith and believe. You must give of yourself before you're worthy to receive, you see. So, it's like that in Krishna consciousness. We're telling you to abstain from the immediate pleasures of this world, abstain from them, in exchange for unlimited pleasure of Krishna bhakti. You say, well, can I have both, Gurudev? Can I have both? No. It's like Desert Pete, can I drink the water and get the pump to work? No. Unless you pour the water, forego drinking the water and pour it down the pump, you're not going to get any water. And you're not going to have enough water. You'll die of thirst because you didn't have enough water to cross the desert. But if you have faith in Desert Pete and you pour the water down the pump, you'll fill up all your canteens and you'll make it across the desert safe and sound. You see? That's a good simile. You have to have faith in Desert Gurudev. That he's going to get you across the desert of material existence. You have to have faith in Desert Gurudev. But if you indulge your senses thinking, well, can I do both? Can I get the water from the pump and drink what's in the container? No, you can't do both. Yeah, it's either one or the other. You have either sense gratification or Krishna consciousness. You have to decide where are you going to put your faith. You have to decide. Sense gratification or Krishna consciousness. Shreya or Preya? You get a little bit of immediate pleasure, or you can get unlimited eventual pleasure with tapasya in the beginning. Like that verse in the Upadeshamrita, Shat Krishna Nama Charitari Satapya Vidya Pato Patasya Rasanasya Narochikanu Kintavandaranadanidam Kaluchayi Vadushta Svami Svadi Kramad Bhavati Mula Handri. That the holy name, character, and pastimes of Krishna are transcendentally sweet, just like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one who is afflicted with the jaundice of avidya cannot taste anything sweet, it is simply wonderful that by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So in the beginning, it's like jaundice. The jaundiced person experiences sugar candy is bitter, so bitter he just want to spit it out. It's so bitter. But he takes that on the order of his doctor, his physician. And by taking that sugar candy in his jaundiced state, that sugar candy gradually regains its original sweet flavor, you see. So actually there's nothing sweeter than Krishna's name. Tunde tandamani vitang vitinate tundavali lamdiye karna kratagadamadi katiyate kunavibrasvaham chitta pangana sangani vijayate sravendriyanam kritim jani janita kriyadbir amritai krishneti varnadvai. Rupa Goswami says, Krishneti Varna Dvai. Varna is syllables. Krishna and Dvai is two. So these two syllables, what are the two syllables? Krishna. These are the two syllables. So Rupa Goswami says, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables contain. Because when I vibrate them, Krishna is personally dancing on my tongue. And when Krishna is dancing on my tongue, he's oozing out so much nectar that my one little mouth just can't hold all that nectar. So I need to have millions of mouths. And when Krishna enters the holes of my ears, there's so much nectar, I need to have billions and trillions of ears to capture that nectar. And when Krishna dances in the courtyard of my heart, my mind is completely conquered. I'm stunned. I'm paralyzed in a state of transcendental ecstasy. So you're not going to get that from sex. No, you're never going to get that from sex. Even if you went to the heavenly planets, and had sex on the head, you're not going to get that from sex pleasure. You'll never get such a pleasure from sex. Therefore, what does Jamanacharya Albandra say about sex desire? You know that verse? Yadavadi mamacheta krishna padaravinde navanava rasadama nyunyatarantu masit tadavati bhattanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukushushtu nishtivanamcha. He says, ever since formerly he was a king in India. Now, they had harems, okay? And they could have sex. When they marry the princess and all of her maidservants come along, and he can have sex with all the maidservants too. It's big, full facility for sex enjoyment in the old days, Vedic kings. So, even we read, what was his name? Vidura was, they're called Dasiputra, a son of one of the maidservants. So that's an example. Vidura was a Dasiputra. He was born from one of the maidservants. So the king had the queen and all the maidservants as well. He had a huge facility for sex pleasure. So this Jamunacharya Albandra was formerly a king, but he gave it up to become a sage, a sadhu. And he's remembering. He remembers that, what it was like. He formerly was very lusty, you see. So he says, now that I've engaged in the loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, tasting ever-increasing transcendental happiness in that service, whenever my mind thinks back to, you know, sex, gets caught up in the idea of sex pleasure, he says, my lips curl with this taste and I spit at the thought. This verse is in the Bhagavad Gita purport. It's Prabhupada emphasized this verse, I'm putting it right there in the Gita purport. I spit at the thought. So, we have to, if one actually wants to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness, you have to be able to spit at the thought of illicit sex outside of the orders of the spiritual master. Spit at the whole idea, like, that kind of an attitude. Just spit at it. It's disgusting. It's abominable. It's death. It's worse than death. So in this way, one has to become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. That is a real grihastha, you see. That is a real grihastha. So we're going to noon, was it? 12 noon? Okay. So are there any questions as of yet? Okay. Here's some questions. What can a devotee do in moments when one feels the struggle against Maya is overwhelming and tiring? When the going, as we said the other day, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. So you got to become tough when it going gets tough. You got to tough. You have to strengthen. You have to increase your focus. Just like a laser beam is a highly focused beam of light. It's so focused it can burn through metal. So when the material energy is so thick and heavy, it's like bumping against a piece of metal. And I feel like you're bashing your head against a piece of metal. You have to become so focused like a laser, you can just burn right through that metal, you see. You have to intensify. Krishna, my dear Lord, I'm having great difficulty. Please help me. Please, Krishna. You have to beg, intensely beg Krishna, you see. I find when we come to the temple room, you know, we have a chance to bow down before the altar and before Prabhupada. It's a great opportunity if you're having some problem that day. Say, Prabhupada, I'm having a rough day today. Please help me. You know, please help me. This intensity of prayer is very fair, very powerful and very effective. Whatever difficulties you have, you can, in prayer, you can reveal everything. Actually, one principle is to tell Krishna everything about your life. Everything. Just to lay it all out on the table. Krishna, I'm a rascal, I'm a dog. I did this, I did that. I've engaged in so many nonsense activities. But now I want to be your pure devotee. Please save me, my dear Lord. So in this way, intensity of prayer will actually work miracles to pull you out of whatever difficulties you're feeling. Sometimes it feels that it is hopeless. The prospecting of having no material desires seems impossible. Why don't you just fill your heart with spiritual desires? Don't worry about getting rid of the material desires. Just fill your heart up with spiritual desires. Squeeze all those rascal desires out. We're not saying become desireless. You see? Fill your heart with spiritual desires. I want to make devotees. I want to learn some verses. I want to save the world, whatever. You see? Fill your heart with spiritual desires. I'd like to learn how to cook, how to offer arti. I'd like to go to Vrindavan. I would like to bathe in Jamuna. I would like to circumambulate Govardhan. I would like to, you know, go out and start a temple. You know, fill your heart with spirit. I like to distribute books. I like to do 108 books one day. You know, fill your heart with spiritual desires. I'd like to get initiated. You know, have so many spiritual desires that 24 hours a day is not enough time. Oh, I'd like to read this book. I'd like to read that. I'd like to learn that bhajan by heart so I can sing it any time when I'm driving down the freeway. You know, just fill your heart with spiritual desires. And with material desires, I don't have time for you anymore. Sorry, Charlie. You have to wait outside. I'm too busy with my spiritual desires. You see? In this way. That's why it becomes easy to conquer with those rascals. Rascal desire. Kick in the face with boot.
Why to fill the mind with spiritual desires? Why not act?
Why not?
Act?
No, spiritual desires mean that you're acting to fulfill them also. Yeah. Just like there's so many verses I'd like to know by heart because, you know, here I am lecturing all over the world. And, you know, I said, boy, if I just knew that sloka, boy, I could really spice up my lecture, you know. Only if I knew that one, you know. There are so many verses. I just like, when I look at these books, I feel like I'm a kid in a candy shop, you know. Look at all this candy. I wish I could eat all of it, you know. For me, the book's like being a kid in a candy shop. You know, I open up the books. There's so much in there. So in this one, I am working on learning verses. You see. So, you have to act on those spiritual desires. That's her point. Some devotees feel embarrassed to wear tilak and arti and a dhoti in public because they may worry about what others think. Or not want the attention for whatever reason. What can we do to encourage devotees to be proud of tilak and dhoti in public? You be proud of tilak and dhoti in public. That's the best thing. By your example. We want to advertise. This advertises our movement. The more we wear devotional clothes and tilak, it advertises our movement. And make people more conscious. Oh, there's Hare Krishnas around here. Wow, I didn't know there was any Hare Krishnas here. There's Hare Krishnas here in Melbourne. Cool. Maybe they have a temple. Well, they ask, where's your temple? I used to go to your temple in San Francisco. And I didn't know you all had a center here in Melbourne. I see you with tilak. There must be a center here. Where is it? See how wearing dhoti and tilak or a sari advertises our movement. You're a walking, talking Hare Krishna billboard. So do it. I mean, be aggressive. We're trying to save the world. We're not trying to merge into the carpet. We're out to save the world and make a revolution. So be bold. Be active. Be daring and bold. Why does the Supreme Personality of Lord Krishna state in many verses, this is my opinion? Yeah, this I've asked many times. Now, your opinion and my opinion, how much is it worth? How much is your opinion worth? Not much, right? What is our opinion worth? But when the Supreme Court gives an opinion, how much is that worth? That becomes law. So, Krishna is the Supreme Court of all of existence. His opinion is law. That's it. how to always be enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes I feel I am stagnant. Well, I always give the example. When I joined the movement, I was associating with a very enlivened, enthusiastic preacher named Vishnu Janaswamy. We were just a small little handful of brahmacharis and one householder couple at that time. And we're just like, it was a small little group. We were like five or maybe eight of us working with him. It was very intimate, just like at 26 Second Avenue with Prabhupada, you know. It was very intimate. We were very close with Vishnu John Swami. We used to call him Swami. That's what we called him, Swami. And but anyway, he was very fired up to spread the movement. And so when I sent my Guru Dakshina in by mail, because Prabhupada was in London, he initiated me by a letter, I told Prabhupada I want to spread this movement because I was seeing the mood of Vishnu John Swami and I really like that mood, aggressive for spreading this movement. So I told Prabhupada, I want to spread this movement. I sent that in with my dakshina. And Prabhupada wrote me the most wonderful letter back. He said, I can see that you're very sincere. He was very kind, of course. You know, I don't claim what the Prabhupada said about me. I take it as his kindness. But he said, I can see you're a very sincere and enthusiastic boy, eager for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So what are you supposed to do with the order of the spiritual master? You're supposed to obey it, or it's an option? Huh? Obey it. You obey your guru. When your guru gives you an order, you do what he says, and that's it. There's no argument. Gurudev ordered me to do this, so you do it. Your whole life you dedicate to carrying out that order. So Prabhupada said, continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and Krishna will surely bless you. Well, I decided I'm going to follow this order. And it works. Here I am, 43 years later, still chanting, still following the principles, still preaching, blessed with a Krishna-conscious wife and so many wonderful disciples all over the world because I stuck to that order, you see. I stuck to that order. I didn't let my mind throw me off track. Mine? Stay out there in the shoe rack, you see. You can stay out there with the shoes. I'm here with Krishna, with Prabhupada. I have my duty to be Krishna conscious, to be enthusiastic about it, to preach. Prabhupada told us to deliver the whole world. That's the order he gave us in Los Angeles. So I have my orders, my marching orders. Work cooperatively with the wonderful ISKCON devotees and save the world, you see. So take the order of your spiritual master, take the orders of Prabhupada, your grand spiritual master. Take these orders, make them your life and soul, and I guarantee you, you will always be enthusiastic. Can we do ISKCON advertise on TV? Why not? You can afford it. If you have a few million dollars, it's probably not the most effective. Actually, the internet's a more cost-effective way to advertise. I advertise on the internet for my e-course. It's very cost effective, and I've got 16,000 people on my course through internet advertising. Internet nowadays is the best way to advertise. It's cheap also. TV is very expensive, and not that cost effective for us. How to balance social and family pressures with spiritual services and preaching? For example, family rituals. Expectations of in-laws with regards to traditions, children, etc. Relatives are relative. They're not absolute. Don't take your relatives so seriously, really. My grandmother said, why didn't you become a Baptist minister? You know, if I'd taken that seriously, well, I have to please it's my duty to please my grandmother. I'll give up Hare Krishna, I'll join the Baptist church. I mean, don't take the relatives' demands very seriously. Just do your duty. And like we read in the other day, yesterday we read, you say yes, 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 yes. And you go on with your Krishna consciousness. You don't argue with them. You say, oh, yes, 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 yes. And you go on with your Krishna consciousness. tactfully avoid, don't make waves, keep it nice and mellow, but do your Krishna conscious duties. And that's your only real duties you have as Krishna consciousness. Just like my brother, I have a brother, and he lives in the same city that I do in Austin. I used to go thinking, well, he's my brother, on Christmas I'll go visit him. But actually he's my younger brother. In Vedic culture, the younger brother has to, the older brother doesn't go to the younger comes to the older. So now I don't go anymore, but if he's always welcome to come visit me, if he wants to. But you know, there's so many family reunions, it just didn't fit my schedule, you know. My Uncle Don, I didn't go to his funeral. You know, just even my mother died, I was in Vrindavan at the time. My father, I did go for his funeral. Some family obligations we did. Of course, I went in a dhoti and tilak, you know, to a Christian church, my father's memorial service. So sometimes we do a little bit. My father was very helpful for us in our Krishna consciousness. He facilitated us, gave us some support to help us. So some little thing you may do, but not so much. I mostly avoided all this family's obligations. For the 99%, I avoided it. A little bit. Maybe every now, very slight a little bit, I did. How to practically apply the principle of having no obligations to demigods, family? I just answered that question. 99% avoid it. 1% you can do. Make a show. Can you please explain about how we fell down from the spiritual world? It's actually inconceivable how we fell down from the spiritual world, but it did happen. We were envious of Krishna, why he gets to be the Supreme, why I can't be the Supreme. So Krishna gave us a place where we could dream. Not that where we could be the Supreme, but we could dream that we're the Supreme. That's all. This is a hallucination, place for of hallucination. This is called the world of illusions. Everybody thinks, even from little babies, little kids, everyone thinks they're the center of the universe. Everyone. That's it's a facility given by Krishna because of our desire to be like that. It is stated that we came down in the material world from the position of Brahma. No. Your Brahma is in the material world. Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, your first birth in this material world is as Lord Brahma. So we've all been Brahmajis before. We don't know which universe. This universe has a four-headed Brahma, but there are universes with 40-headed Brahmas, 400-headed Brahmas, 4,000-headed Brahmas, 40,000-headed Brahmas, etc. We don't know which universe we came through. We fell in the material world, but all of us, according to Prabhupada's purport, all of us were Lord Brahma at a certain time in the past. Every one of us was a Lord Brahma. That was our first fall down, to become first fallen position to be Lord Brahma. What makes Brahma to accumulate karma and fall down further? Not surrendering to Krishna. Simple thing. How do you manage deity worship when traveling? By prioritizing it. That's simple. My wife is in charge of it, and I follow her directions. She treats Radha Damodara as persons, and she never neglects them. They're always first, and whatever she says has to be done. I just cooperate with her. That's all. She's the head pujari, and I'm the assistant pujari.
Pujari has two meanings. Pujari has two meanings.
Hmm?
Pujari has two meanings.
What are the two meanings? You're giving a negative thing now?
Yeah.
What's the negative?
The cleaning person.
Huh?
The cleaning person.
Oh. Yeah, but...
Pujari has two meanings.
She's being humble. So, yeah, we have a my wife got a very nice little pouch that's a traveling bed, and we put them in there. We zip them up, and it's very nice. Their crowns fit in there. Their shoes. And we get to a place, and you just, you know, we say the prayers, unzip it, we take bath, open it up, and there we are. We can do RT right there, you see. We have a little, one of my disciples in Lithuania made a beautiful little traveling altar. It's the one that's in the room now, a beautiful painting on it. It's actually very wonderful to worship Krishna. So every day we have to wake them up, they're bathed, they're dressed. And every evening they're also dressed and put in their night clothes, put to rest. They get the arati several times a day. Sometimes we may have to, if we're flying, we may have to not open them up. You know, very rarely, very, very rarely. But we're always, every day they're worshipped without fail. It is said that the Guru is the sum total of all the demigods. Do you have a reference for that? Yes, it's in Prabhupada's lecture that he gave to the Gaudiya Math on the Vyas Puja Day of his spiritual master.
It's in the Bhagavatam.
There it's, the Bhagavatam says it different. He is the representative of the demigods. The Bhagavatam says, you can show me. I'm not familiar with that reference. The Bhagavatam, the same Sanskrit, Sarvadeva Mayo Guru.
Yes.
It's translated in the Bhagavatam as the representative of all the demigods, and it's translated in Prabhupada's Vyas Puja homage and to the Gaudiya Math as the sum total of all the demigods. Same Sanskrit, translated two different ways. So it's two different ways of saying the same thing. The sum total of the demigods and a representative of the demigods. So you can find the sum total of all the demigods in Prabhupada. It's published every year in the Vyas Puja book. Prabhupada's Vyas Puja lecture he gave to his spiritual master. It's published there. You can just pick up one. Or if you have the Veda base, you can find it there. Or if not, it should be in the Science of Self-Realization also. In that book, it might be published. If you can't find it, just shoot me an email. I'll give you the quote, an exact quote from the lecture. It's in the Bhagavatam verse. The sum total of all the demigods? When you find it, let us know. It is said that Krishna gave Arjuna divya gyan, spiritual eyes, to see the universal form of Krishna, although Arjuna was seeing the spiritual two-handed form of Krishna. Can you clarify on this? Yeah, he could see the two-handed Krishna, but he was, everybody was seeing that two-handed Krishna, but they weren't seeing him as the Supreme Lord. They were seeing him as an ordinary, most of them saw him as an ordinary person at that time. They didn't see him as the Supreme Lord. But he showed that universal form to prove that he was indeed the Supreme Lord, that everything was existing within him. He showed it to Arjuna. Can you please explain any good pastime of Lord Shiva with Krishna? I can think about maybe doing that. Can we judge and analyze in our bhakti that Krishna has started reciprocating with us and we are progressing in our bhakti? Yes. He has. Krishna is doing that. He's reciprocating with you at every minute. By every time you say Hare Krishna, Krishna reciprocates with them. Every time you take prasadam, every time you associate with devotees, every time you hear a lecture, every time you preach, Krishna reciprocates with everything that you're doing. Do living entities suffer two times for his karma? In the hellish planets and also in the next life? No. You only have to suffer once. But you haven't finished all of it. In other words, someone may go to the hellish planets, to suffer their karma, but they haven't suffered for all of it yet. So they come back, they come from the hellish planets, they come up to the earthly planet, and they're still suffering. It means they haven't burned off all of it yet. You don't suffer twice for the same thing, but it means you haven't suffered for all of it yet. You haven't done your full sentence yet for all of your karma. Some of it was done, now you have more to undergo. When politics comes into play at a temple, and there seems to be a narrow-mindedness in terms of expanding ways to preach Krishna consciousness, even to the point of opposing others' attempts to give their best for Krishna, what is one to do to maintain an advancement in wholesome development? Is it worth considering a more suitable environment? If not, where to find inspiration to keep going with such restrictions? Well, it could be your narrow-mindedness. You got to watch out for them. It could be your narrow-mindedness. But the real thing is this. If one has a sincere desire to push forward this movement and to preach in very dynamic and powerful ways, Krishna will facilitate it. Krishna is the supreme facilitator. So there may be some criticism. I mean, I've been criticized for my preaching. I have. Sometimes if you're really a preacher and somebody's criticizing you for preaching, then you can defeat their criticism. That's one thing. It's like I have my course is called the Ultimate Self-Realization Course. It's not that I say that mine's the best of any training program within ISKCON. I'm not saying that about that title. But this process of Krishna consciousness is called by Srila Prabhupada the Ultimate Self-Realization System. So every single ISKCON temple, every single ISKCON preacher is giving the ultimate self-realization training. Everyone is. So, but it's also catchy for advertising on the internet. All the Mayavadi, all the junk out there. We had this. Any presentation of Krishna consciousness is the ultimate self-realization presentation. Everyone's doing that. Or all our preachers are doing that. So one of my peers objected that this name was not proper. And I really, I knew that criticism was not valid because I even told this person. The quote's right there, Prabhupada calls it right there in his books, that Prabhupada is wrong for calling it ultimate self-realization. So I told this devotee, I said, sometimes I think the only thing I can do to please my God brothers is to die as soon as possible. That's what I told them. And that shut them up. Sometimes you have to, if you're really preaching and somebody is really attacking you for your preaching, and it's really just their envy, they're not really appreciating the sincerity of your preaching, sometimes you do have to defeat them. That's what I had to do. I had to tell this person, and they stopped. They didn't say a word after that. Sometimes they think, the only way I can please my God brothers is to die as soon as possible. Sometimes envy does creep in. Prabhupada had that problem with his God brothers. It does creep in sometimes. If you really are sincerely, purely trying to spread Krishna consciousness, Krishna will empower you to defeat their criticism. So that's one thing, you see. Krishna will empower you to defeat their criticism. But it could be that you're being narrow-minded. So that's why you really need to become mature in your own Krishna consciousness. You need to have a spiritual master. You need to be initiated to see that I'm actually fully, properly situated in Krishna consciousness. That you have to do. Because it could just be your own neophyte foolishness, you see. It could be your neophyte foolishness. Or it could be that you're being your brilliant idea is being squelched by people who just don't get how brilliant it actually is. It could be them, you see. So in this way, one really needs to be under a spiritual master, not on your own. You have to have a spiritual master so you can consult with your Guru Maharaj to make sure you're doing the right thing, that you're not, you know, going completely off the track. When you have a spiritual master that you're working under his guidance and direction, his blessings, then you can always check with him. Guru Maharaj, they're telling me this. I had this idea, and they're saying, oh, it's Maya. Am I wrong or are they wrong? Or you know, in this way, you can check with your spiritual master. And that way, by always having your spiritual master to guide you, you know, how to properly, you know, utilize your talents and your abilities in the proper way, then you can always be enthusiastic because you have your Guru Maharaj blessing you and guiding you. Please tell me any best moment of your life with Prabhupada. Any best moment. Actually, that letter when he said, I have to admit, when he wrote me that, he said, you're a very sincere and enthusiastic boy. That was really so eager for spreading this movement. Continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. That was really, that was really a special moment. I got that letter from Prabhupada. Nothing can beat that. Nothing can beat that. Okay, now pass on to Lord Shiva with Krishna. Mohini Murti and Lord Shiva, that's quite a leela. Lord Shiva, to show Lord Shiva his position, Lord Shiva, you know, has to be humble before Krishna. So he was very much humbled. Krishna took the form of a woman, Mohini Murti. And Lord Shiva became so... Normally he's called Ditta. He's very sober and sense-controlled. He can he's perfectly in control of his senses. He's considered the greatest of all Vaishnavas. You know, nobody can be more sense-controlled than Lord Shiva. Parvati was touching his genital, and he didn't even disturb his meditation. There's some lila like that. So he's very ditta. But when Krishna took the form of a woman, became Mohini Murti, Shiva lost it. He completely lost it. He went crazy. He's running after Mohini Murti. His semen was squirting out as he was running across, trying to get her. I mean, he was completely lost it. So that's an interesting pastime of Krishna and Shiva. Completely lost it. He couldn't control himself when Krishna took the form of a woman. Because Krishna is the Supreme. Can we think of Lord Ram while chanting Hare Krishna? Are we indirectly also worshipping Lord Ram and following his footsteps? Yeah, you can think of Lord Ram. He's also Krishna in a certain rasa. That Ram in the Hare Krishna mantra, it refers to Lord Ramachandra, to Lord Balaram also, you can think of him, or Lord Parasaram, or you can, what I prefer is it also refers to Krishna. Krishna, Rama means the supreme enjoyer, so Krishna is also Rama. Or in Vrindavan, you can think Krishna Balaram, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. All those meditations are bona fide. But I'd like just to think that it's Krishna, because all those others are Krishna in different rasas, different moods. Is it practically speaking that we can transcend the three modes? Is it practically speaking that we can transcend the three modes of material nature? Of course you can. All you have to do is be Krishna conscious, and immediately you're out of the influence of the modes, because even if we come to the platform of goodness, we need to transcend this mode in Kali Yuga. Chances of falling down are very high. Can you please explain? The mode of goodness is easily transcended. You just come to Krishna consciousness, and then you're safe. How do you come to Krishna consciousness? Take shelter of the holy name, take shelter of your spiritual master, take shelter of Prabhupada's teachings. In this way, you are beyond even the mode of goodness. According to scriptures, Who is more intelligent, men or women? Well, depends on how you define intelligence. Traditionally, in former times, before the Kali Yuga, those who took birth in male bodies were more inclined towards self-realization, formally. Not now. We don't see it now. But formally, those who, especially brahmanas, but that now, in this age, kalau sudra shambhava, the scriptures say, in this age, everyone is shudra. So in this age, the Kali Yuga is the great equalizer of the sexes. Because in this age, everybody is a shudra. Shudras are not spiritually inclined, and we're all shudras. So we see that some women are very intelligent, some men are very intelligent. Some men are idiots, and some women are idiots. Although Prabhupada did criticize this whole women's liberation idea. rightfully so. I agree with him completely. He's right. Because formerly, if a girl, as I mentioned yesterday, back in the 60s, early 60s, if you got a girl pregnant, you'd marry her, do the right thing, you'd marry her, you see. You do your duty, you gotta marry her. You've got her pregnant, you gotta marry her. You know, protect her. But now, abortion, women's liberation, women become free prostitutes. You can have sex with any girl you want. You can take her out to dinner. I saw it in the magazine, in the checkout line, it said, sex on the first date or not. That was the thing. Should you wait for the second date before you have sex, or should you have it on the first? That was the question. Can you imagine? That's how degraded the culture has become. So now the women are just free prostitutes. You don't even pay. Why? In fact, I remember, I think it was in Mumbai, the prostitutes were having a hard time earning their living because the women had become free prostitutes, you see. Because of this so-called women's liberation, the women have become free prostitutes in the name of, and they think this is liberation. Formerly, if a man would take responsibility if he got her pregnant, and now she has to either kill the child by abortion or go to the government and beg for welfare. You see? And this is liberation. So Prabhupada said, therefore I say 32 ounce. Sometimes it was one time measured, this is a previous measurement, back in Prabhupada's college days, that some scientist had measured there is even now there's a difference in the brain, it's measured a difference between the brains, they have different sort of brains, just like the body is different, the bodily constitution, there's also a difference in the brain, even modern science agrees, there's a difference in the brain. But as one godbrother said, it's not what you have, it's what you do with it that really counts. So anyway, Prabhupada one time said how the highest brain substance of men is up to 64 and of women is up to 32. That was what the scientists had said at a certain point. Of course, now they don't say that, but... So with Prabhupada, it's like an inside joke. He told all these lady reporters they couldn't understand Prabhupada's point that formerly if a woman was made pregnant, she would be protected, but now she's either, you know, get an abortion or beg welfare. I'm not going to give any protection. I don't take any I got you pregnant, but I'm not taking any responsibility for you. Even though I impregnated you, I take zero responsibility. So, and they couldn't realize how this was not really liberation. It's like they're being exploited more, you see. And they couldn't understand it. So Prabhupada said, Therefore, I say 32 ounce. All the devotees knew what he was talking about. The reporters didn't know. So in that sense, sometimes we see women are less intelligent. But that's non-devotee women. When someone actually, a woman who's actually inclined towards transcendental knowledge, Prabhupada said, anyone who takes the Krishna consciousness, they are the most intelligent. So a woman who takes Krishna consciousness, he is the most intelligent. And I know my own relationship with my wife, how intelligent she is. She's very, very intelligent. In many ways, she defeats my intelligence. So, and from my own personal experience. So I don't say this about devotee women, but it sometimes you can see this principle of how less intelligent women are. But sometimes you can see that in the non-devotee women. Who can take good decisions in grihastha life? Actually, grihastha life is a partnership. Traditionally, the woman would follow the husband. That's the Vedic culture. But Prabhupada told my godbrother, if she doesn't do what you say, then you do what she says. So it's actually a partnership, that they're working together to please Krishna and to that both of them can become liberated back to home, back to Godhead. Nowadays, women are also working and are intelligent. Still, they are subordinate to men. Physically, a woman is subordinate to a man. There's no doubt about it. Because who is afraid of being raped when they're walking down the street? Women have to be afraid of being raped, not men. Women are definitely weaker and they are objects of sex exploitation. Very rare do we hear some man got raped. It does happen sometimes. But it's extremely rare. Some like homosexual rape or something, you know. But that's extremely rare. But women being raped is an everyday affair in the world, all over the world. Women are being exploited. Just like this ISIS, these ISIS people, they were forcing the women to marry the ISIS fighters, and if they didn't, they would shoot them dead. You see, either marry an ISIS fighter, or we shoot you dead. And that's what they're doing. One ISIS fighter shot killed 150 women who refused to become wives of ISIS fighters. Killed them, shot them dead. So women are very much exploited. It's a fact. Pick up any newspaper. Women are very much exploited in the world. Therefore, they're required to be protected by pious men. The unscrupulous, sinful men exploit women like anything. Therefore, pious men have to protect the women. That's a fact. So women are weaker, and they're more objects, more exploitable and exploited than men, and men are duty-bound to protect them. So there is a difference. There's a difference. Prabhupada says a 16-year-old boy can travel all over the world without difficulty, but a 16-year-old girl traveling alone all over the world, look out, big problem. It's dangerous. A woman is in a much more vulnerable, dangerous position. So a woman actually requires to be protected. Otherwise, she can easily be exploited. It's a fact. It's a reality. It's not just some spiritual principle. It's statistics. Just look what's happening in the newspaper and you'll see how women are being exploited. So pious men have to protect women to make sure they're not exploited. And the pious man will not exploit a woman. He will see that she's happily situated in Krishna consciousness and he'll protect her from unscrupulous men who want to take advantage of her. So, our time is up. Any last questions? You were this is like the PhD level now. You're the ones that survived. in the university, you know, the bachelor's level is a huge class, the master's level, but the PhD level is just a few, select few. So you all are the PhD level students of Krishna consciousness. You've stuck it out all the way through. So I congratulate all of you for your intelligence. You're the intelligent, the cream of the intellectuals. You've stuck it out all the way through. You're the cream, men and women both. You're all the intellectual cream. Huh?
It's 12 noon.
Yeah, that's right. So it's time to chant our Gayatri mantras.
It's not chanting.
Time to end the lecture.
Everybody will have to leave by 1:30 or 2.
Oh, so we have to pack it up and move it out. All right, so let's not go over time today. But there's some prasadam to hand out. The kids come first. And some prasadam would come out, and we thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.